Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Krisus Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur picks up from a point that was mentioned in the Mishnah at the end of our previous shiur, at the lower part of Daf Tes Amud Beis. We were dealing with the topic of a woman who, after childbirth, is required to bring a sacrifice. More accurately, sacrifices. We also learned that in the event that a woman has a miscarriage, she also needs to bring sacrifices, provided that the miscarriage takes place more than 40 days after conception of the child. Within 40 days, it's not considered an embryo, but rather it's considered mere water, hence not generating the need for a sacrifice. Another point that we learned was that if a miscarriage takes place within the birth period, the malos, which is a period of time after a child's birth during which the woman has a special status, she is considered a tbulas yoim oroich, whereby she is forbidden to partake of sacrifices following a female birth for a period of 80 days. This is called the malos. Following a male birth, that same halacha will be applies to a 40-day period, half the time. During the first week, in the case of a male birth, or first 2 weeks, she is tamea and is forbidden to have relations with her husband, but following that initial tuma period, she is muteris to her husband, but she has this status that we just mentioned, the tfulas yom oroich. During that period of time, if she should have another miscarriage, it's not practical to talk about it when speaking about a male birth, but when dealing with a female birth, where there's an 80-day malois period, a miscarriage within that time will not generate the need for an additional sacrifice. We saw a machlokes tanoim concerning a case where after that, we'll call second birth or miscarriage, a third miscarriage takes place within the 80 days of the second one, but beyond 80 days of the first one. Imagine a type of chain reaction where the third birth slash miscarriage takes place, as we said, within 80 days of the second miscarriage. Now, on this point, we saw a machlokes tanoim. Shitas Reb Yehuda said that that third birth miscarriage will generate its own sacrifice, being that it doesn't take place within 80 days of the initial birth, which generated the initial need to bring a sacrifice, a birth-related sacrifice. As far as Reb Yehuda is concerned, the second birth is considered non-existent with regard to the halacha of korbonos. So, therefore, the second birth is considered as subsumed under the first birth, which did generate a sacrifice. But the third birth has to stand on its own, because even though it's within 80 days of the second birth, but the second birth, as far as Shitas Reb Yehuda is concerned, it's considered a non-factor or non-existent. The question that our Gemara opens up with today, at the very top of Daf Yud Amud Aleph,
The first two words, by the way, of today's shiur are found at the bottom of Teslamid Beis, so don't be concerned if you don't see them at the top of Daf Yud. The words are Ibaya Laho, meaning a question was asked. And the Gemara will ask here at the top of Daf Yud a question within Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. We also have a long question marking that accompanies this. Starting from the top line, you see the shin that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. The shin to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text indicates a sheila, a question, taking you down to the last of the narrow Gemara lines. Following that, a series of triangles will appear in alternating directions. This is all explained by looking at the outside margin under our Nosei heading, and following that will be a Mivneh heading. The Nosei is a topic heading, which introduces this Gemara, and it's actually an issue that preoccupied the Gemara till Omid Beis, as we've indicated on our note in the outside margin. So let's read that note. The Nosei, Ad Omid Beis, She'ela, a question will be raised, L'Rebbe Yehuda, according to Shitas Rebbe Yehuda, Ha'im Rak Legabi Korbonois, Soiv Rebbe Yehuda, Devlad Sheni Kemandalesi, is it so that Rebbe Yehuda views the second birth / miscarriage as non-existent, only with regard to the issue of sacrifices? Me'achar shenolad b'mlos shalishon, because it emerged, it was miscarried within the malois period, those 80 days of the first birth. U'memeilo yischayev korbonos noisofim, and as a result of that, if there is a third miscarriage, there will be the need for bringing new sacrifices, namely that third miscarriage takes place beyond the initial 80 days, though it's within the 80 days of the second birth. Avol legabi tuma, however, with regard to another realm, which we didn't discuss it with any great length, the realm of tuma, that has to do with the woman's ritual purity status. And we mentioned that after a birth or a miscarriage, she is, in the case of a female birth, Tamea for 2 weeks. And then following that, there's another 66 days that are called Yemei Tohar, that all come under the term Melois. Those Yemei Tohar are days in which she is allowed to be in a state of intimacy with her husband, even though she may be experiencing a blood flow. It should be noted that everything we're saying here has no relevance to the practical application of halacha, but it does have relevance to the Torah level of understanding. In practical halacha, many times there are rabbinic stringencies that are imposed, but that's beyond the purview of our shiur. So, focusing right now on that second birth miscarriage, does that generate its own 1466-day unit of time called the Melois? And as our note continues, Avalagabi Tuma Vlad Sheni Kemandi Ise, the second Vlad does have its own significance, Umoine Liatsmo, and there will be accounting for it, Levad Oison Shel Rishon, besides the days that we count with respect to the first birth. Oy Dilma, or it could be Gam Legabi Tumo Loi Amrinon de Vlad Sheni Keman de Ise, or it could be that regarding the issue of Tuma, that's these subsequent days after the birth, and the issue of her Tuma status, we might say that the Vlad Sheni is Keman de Ise. Lo Amrinon de Vlad Sheni Keman de Ise. We don't say that the Vlad Sheni, the second birth, is as if it is a reality or exists. L'groim, to cause Shiemale Yemei Toihar de Rishon, Achre Yemei Tuma de Sheni. That would mean, and here we need to use a practical example, that at the point there's the second miscarriage, let's say, at day 60 of the woman's birth, woman's miscarriage, there's a miscarriage at day 60 from the initial birth, that would interrupt the Yemei Tohar of the first birth. The Yemei Tohar means that that lady has a period from day 14 till day 80 at which she is has this status of Tohar, where she's allowed to be with her husband under all circumstances. So that if day 60 of that 80-day period she has another miscarriage, let's say a female miscarriage, that would make her Tamea for 14 days. So now 14 days have been interrupted of the initial 80-day period. So if you say that the Vlad Sheni is a reality, that would mean that it caused an interruption, and we would have to make up another 14 days for the first birth that she lost out on as a result of the Yemei Tuma of the second miscarriage. Now, that idea of the second miscarriage being considered a reality, something that we view as a factor, that would cause it to be an interruption, and hence I would then have to make up the missing 14 days that are entitled to the woman from the first birth. So now, that having been said, we will notice, after we present the question, triangles that appear, and we'll hold off till they actually appear to read our Mivneh note. Now, the Gemara. From the top line, plus two words from the bottom of Tesamit Beis, Ibai Aloho, Betuma Mali Omar Rav Yehuda. Regarding the issue of Tuma, do we say that the second birth has its own Malois? And actually, the application of that will be explained by the Gemara itself. The question is in the Aleph Oidoma Beis fashion. The Aleph, you can see, is noted above the line. And a number of lines later, you will see the squiggle underlined expression Oy Dilma, introducing Beis, the second side of this question. So it is as follows: Mi Amrinon, do we say Ad Kan Loi Kamale Rebuta Vlad Sheni Kamanda Lesse Domi? That till now Rebuta says that the second birth is as if it's not there. Elo Leinyan Korban. Only with regard to the issue of korban, namely that it is as if it's not there, and therefore a third birth or miscarriage will require its own sacrifice if it emerges more than 80 days from the first birth, even though it's within 80 days of the second birth. Kevon de lo yotza sha'a shuriya lahakriv bo korban. Since the second that second birth miscarriage that was within 80 days of the first birth was a time at which the mother could not have brought a korban because of her tuma status, her tevulas yom oruch status. Hoyol v'chein, because of her inability to actually bring the korban within those first 80 days, Vlad Sheni Kamanda Lesse Domi. It doesn't have its own significance. It's enveloped in that first birth period. Avol Le'inyan Tuma V'Tahara Emo. But with regard to the other issue, the non-korban issue, the issue of her own status, her Tuma Tahara status, Amos Virole, I might suggest that according to Rabbi Yehuda, Keman Deisei Domi, it is a reality, it's a factor. Umifsika Tuma Desheni, and the Tuma, which is the initial forbidden days after a birth or miscarriage, are Mafsik, they interrupt the 80 days of the entitled to the first birth. Umimale Yoime Tara Derishon, and she'll have a make up period of those 14 lost Tuma days. She'll make them up afterwards. Vahodar moina yoime tahara l'sheni. And then she will count the 66 days of tahara for that second birth. This approach that we just read would demonstrate that the second birth is a reality, that we focus on it on its own merits. Therefore, it would serve to interrupt the first 80-day period. If you're dealing with a female birth, there would be a 14-day interruption. I would then make up the 14 lost days from the first 80-day period. And then following that makeup, I'll then count another 66 days for the Yemei Toar of the Sheni. Oidilma, or possibly the Rabbi Yehuda, Chumra Hu de Islei. Rabbi Yehuda has an approach of stringency with regard to these multiple births. Avol Hacha Kulahu. But here, with regard to what we are suggesting, it actually is, we're suggesting a leniency, because those makeup days are days that we allow her to experience intimacy, even though she is experiencing a blood flow. Vekula lesle, and Rabbi Yehuda will not be willing to afford the woman with a point of leniency. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda's approach to this whole issue of multiple births is one that goes only in the direction of stringency. As we saw before with regard to sacrifices, that a third birth that takes place within 80 days of the second birth won't enjoy a korban exemption, but rather that third miscarriage will require her to bring a, will obligate the woman to bring a sacrifice, as opposed to the approach that taken by the Chachomim in the Mishnah on Tesamid Beis, where she actually was exempt, because according to the Chachomim, we saw a type of chain reaction where any subsequent birth will have its own significance, so as a birth that takes place afterwards will be enveloped in that previous birth, and as we say, a chain reaction, so that each one of them will be connected to the previous birth, even though all these subsequent births are not within the 80 days of the first birth, but each subsequent birth, provided it takes place within 80 days of the previous one, will be exempted from a sacrifice. Now, if this appears a little difficult to understand, we recommend going back to the Mishnah on Tes Amid Beis and our Shir there. The question having been raised, the Gemara presented the question. Before going on in the Gemara to refine some of these points, because it's necessary to have this down very well before you go on in this sukkah, let's glance at the Rashi. Rashi on the second line from the top. This is a Rashi explaining the first side of the question, where Rabbi Yehuda, though, with regard to sacrifices, said that the second birth is as if it's not there. With regard to Tum and Tara, maybe we do reckon with the second birth. So Rashi says, Aval inyan Tum of Tara, Moina la'atzmoi, we will count, it will have its own counting, Ravad oison shel rishon, besides the days entitled to the first birth. V'nikroin yemei hatuma al shmoi, and the yemei tuma will be called according to the second birth. Umesulakin mimalois shel rishon, and they're a separate entity from the malois days, those 80 days of the first birth. Umifsiko tuma desheni es yemei toar shel rishon, the yemei tuma, which are the initial days following the birth, where she is forbidden to her husband in the case of a female birth for a period of 14 days. So those yemei tuma of the second will interrupt the 66 days of Tara that are entitled to a woman after a female birth. Umemale yemei tohar derishon. And then she'll make up those missing tohar days. Deha malois derishon e efshe deloma lina leila Rabbi Yehuda. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, it would be impossible not to make the first malos days up. The hu ikr, the first birth, was the main birth. The hodar moni shmoinim yemei tohar l'sheni. And then after that, there will be a makeup of the full 80 days for the second birth. Oidilma chumra islay, Rashi goes on, or possibly Rabbi Yehuda's whole approach to this matter is only one of stringency. Lafushe korbonos, to add sacrifices. As we said before, a third birth will require its own sacrifice, unlike the approach of the Chachomim. V'yohiv yemei tuma v'yemei tahara l'sheni. Mishas leidosa. She will get the yemei tuma and tahara from the time of the second birth. And she won't be able to partake of sacrifices until the Yemei Tuma 14 and Tara 66 days that follow that second birth. Avokulo leslay, but a leniency he doesn't have. Liois Yemei Hatuma Nikroyan al Shmoi Desheni, that we would refer to the Yemei Tuma as Yemei Tuma of the second one. Lios gomrim hashloma l'rishon tachtein, because if we were to call the second birth with its own identity, that would say to us that it's actually interrupting the first yemei tuma and tara of the first one, causing us to have a makeup of those missing days. The lahai milso nami keman delesei domi, because according to this second approach, we're going to say that regarding Tumantara, the second birth is as if it's not there. V'yemei tohar derishon lo mimalinon, and as a result, we won't have a makeup for the yemei Tumantara of the first one. V'timli v'sheni yemei tohar achrini tachtehen, and she will complete though yemei tohar of the second birth. Deha milsa kulihi laharich tohar domeho v'kulo leslei, because in order for us to grant her makeup days of the first birth that were interrupted would be a leniency, and we're saying that Rabbi Yehuda does not hold from a lenient approach at all. V'ho leko lemeimar, and the following one should not say, the leve sheni botel agamri mitoras molois, that the second birth is completely non-existent with regard to the malos days. The honami kulohi, that too would be an illustration of a leniency. In other words, it might sound a little strange, but we'll understand this very shortly, to say that the second birth is completely not there, whereby she would not have any malos days, that would actually have a lenient ring to it. Because you are actually enabling her to partake of kochim earlier than otherwise. The al korchuch bois lemes of yemei tohar l'sheni, there has to be yemei tohar for the second birth miscarriage in order to elongate the period of prohibition from eating sacrifices. Hilkoch iyavis l'rishon hashlomas yemei tohar. However, if you were to give her makeup days for the first birth that was interrupted by the second birth, kulahu, that kulahi, that would be a leniency with regard to allowing her to be with her husband in an intimate fashion for more days. So it's we're straddling the fence over here to preserve an element of stringency, but not to stringency where there is some level of allowance made, but not to overdo it. When I say overdo it, they overdo the prohibition of the second birth altogether. In other words, to shorten
the Yemei Tohar altogether would be a certain type of leniency, enabling her to partake of sacrifices all the faster. So, as Rashi went through all of these details, you can see there's a push and pull element. All of that having been said, we now go to seek an answer.
The Mivneh heading indicates the triangles being featured, and it's a ma'akav. A ma'akav is the attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style, or back-and-forth style of argument in the Gemara. With the triangle point facing up, they represent nisyonos lifshot she'lanal, attempts to resolve the question. The triangle, when inverted, represents dechios, rejections. Structurally, when you look at the Gemara and the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you skim down the page, you'll see triangles with numbers. It's at that point in the Gemara that a new source will be introduced as part of the attempt to resolve the question. But between the numbered triangles, there is a lot of give and take in the Gemara itself. So the first source the Gemara introduces, Toshma. Omar, we missed the name there. So Omar Rav Huna Misura Toshma. We have a Tanaic source, and it is in the context of the Korban Pesach. It says Yoledes Shochten Vizorkin Oleho Biyoim Arboim Lazochar Uviyoim Shmoinim Lenikeva. A Yoledes, a woman who gave birth, we will slaughter and sprinkle the blood of a Korban Pesach on day 40 since a male birth, and day 80 since a female birth. V'havinon bo, and we ask, Tameohi, how can you shecht for her a Korban Pesach? And the shechting of a Korban Pesach means that you're going to prepare it for her and she'll partake of it, when on day 80, in the case of a female birth, day 80 since a female birth, this woman herself is Tameah. She doesn't gain her Tara until the next day. So how can you prepare a Korban Pesach, which is a type of Korban that is expected to be eaten from, when you're preparing it for a person who is right now Tomei? The Omar Rav Chista, Homoni, Rav Yehuda Hihu. Rav Chista explains that this source is in accordance with Rav Yehuda, and he establishes this source as talking about a woman who actually was pregnant with twins. And the 40 number that's mentioned here on day 40 or day 80 is a number from, it's a number of days since the second birth. What happened is that a woman gave birth on a given day, and the next day, a second child was born. That second day, or that second birth, is what's referred to in this source. So that if you look at the day 40 figure mentioned in this source, it's day 40 since the second birth, but it's really day 41 since the first birth, which was one day earlier. And this source being in accordance with Rabbi Huda, and as we explained already, we were dealing with a birth of twins, one day apart. And Rav Chisda says, this is in accordance with Rabbi Huda, the Omar Vlad Sheni Kaman Delesei Domi. The second birth is as if it's not there. So how does this work out for our topic? The Amris Tumo Bitumas Ruler Buda Vlad Sheni Kamandi Ise Domi, if you were to say like the first approach that we had taken when we raised the question, the Aleph approach, that regarding Tumo, the second child is a factor, is something you have to reckon with.
then hechi shachtinon alo b'yom mem. How could you shecht a korban pesach for this woman on day 40, since that second birth, 40 days after the second birth? Le'urta nami lo matzia ochla. Even that evening, she wouldn't be able to partake of a sacrifice. A woman who gave birth is tamea, is called a tvulas yoim oruch for 40 days, after which she goes to the mikveh, and there's sundown, but she has to bring sacrifices, and until that point, she is herself forbidden in partaking of korbanos. So the night after day 40, she is still, even if that day 40 is the 14th of Nisan, and at night people eat the Korban Pesach, but that night following day 40, this woman, if you are reckoning things from that second birth, how can this source say that a Korban Pesach can be prepared for her? It would be of no benefit to her in so far as she wouldn't be able to eat it that night. And yet the source says, on day 40 since the second birth, which in effect is day 41 since the first birth, we do prepare a Korban Pesach for her. Elo lav, shmamino, letaro, uletumo, svirule lerebuda, vlad, sheni, kaman, delese domi. So it must be that Rebuda views the second birth, even with regard to the realm of Tuma and Taro, as if it's a non-factor. So that all of our counting is based on the first birth. Let us now glance, or let us learn the Rashi on this topic. Across from here, Rashi says, Omar of Chista, Homoni Rebuda hi, the Omar Vlad Sheni Kaman de Lese Domi. This source with regard to the shechting of the Korban Pesach, and we mentioned day 40 since a male birth and day 80 since a female birth, is according to Rebbe Yehuda. Umokim lo ha bioledes, umokim ha masnisa bioledes tumim. Rebbe Yehuda would explain, Rav Chista explains this source according to Rebbe Yehuda as in a case of a twin birth. Hayom echod v'sheni lamocher, the first child emerged today and the second child emerged on the very next day. The mem d'sheni, day 40 of the second birth, have a mem aleph l'rishon, is 41 since the first birth. V'hayom ru'uya lahavi korbono al harishon, and day 41 is a day, which in our example, by the way, is going to be the 14th of Nisan. That's a day that she is able to bring the sacrifice for her first birth. Vashminin, and the source informs us, Deshertan Leo, we will, on day 41, we will prepare her Korban Pesach, Vafil Mechuseres Kapora, even if she hasn't brought her birth sacrifices yet, on that day, Ula'achar Shitas Piskot Tovi Kaporasa, and we make this allowance that after they slaughter her Korban Pesach, we'll then allow the woman to bring her birth sacrifices, v'tocha lo erev pischa, and the evening, and that evening she'll enjoy, she'll partake of her Korban Pesach. Almo vlad sheni kamanda lesei, we can see from this that the second child is as if it's not there. Lios me'akev oleho, in that that would otherwise serve as a restriction. Shetehe moinoloi, that she should count based on its birth. And that would, if we were to reckon with the second birth, we would then be saying that the Yemei Tohar would continue till the next day, till day 41. Or we should say that that would extend the Yemei Tohar of this woman from the second birth, and making day 40 of the second birth, which comes out on Yud Daled Nisan, a time that she wouldn't be able to bring her Korban Pesach. But we see from this approach that we don't say all of that, and we say that her Yemei Tohar are based only on the first birth, being that the second birth is Keman Delesei Domi. the Rashi goes on, V'i amris betuma svira le Reb Yehuda keman de'isei dami. If one were to say that Reb Yehuda, with regard to Tumah, looks at the second birth as if it is there, ligroim yemei Tumah shaloi hashloma liyemei tohar shel rishon, that the yemei Tumah of the second birth would be viewed as an interruption of the first birth, yemei tohar, causing us to have to make up those lost days, or in this case, one lost day. Well, l'urta nami lo matzia achlo, that evening, she would not be able to eat of the korban pesach. Shehavlad sheni goram laharich yemei tohar shel rishon yoim echad. We would have then said that the second birth caused a loss of one day of the Yemei Tohar of the first birth, Sharei Shmini L'Rishon Shvi L'Sheni, the eighth day since the first birth is really the seventh day of the second birth, Umimei Tumaso Hu, that eighth day is the part of the Yemei Tuma of the second child, the Hifsik Minyano Shel Rishon, and that interrupts the counting of the first child, Utsrich L'Shlimoi, and she would have to make that up. The ad yoim mem ushnayim, that's 42, until day 42, the rishon, eino ru'uya lahavi kaparasa, she wouldn't be able to bring her birth sacrifices. And now that day 42 in our scenario is already the 15th of Nisan. Elolav shmamino keman the lesa l'sheni domi. We therefore have to say that the second birth with regard to Tumah and Tara is considered as if it's not there. The oilin yemei Tumah v'Tara shaloi leminyan yemei Tohar shel Rishon. The yemei Tumah and Tara of the second child are enveloped within the yemei Tumah and Tara of the first birth, enabling this woman on day 41 since the first birth to have her Korban Pesach brought. The Gemara continues now with a rejection. You can see the triangle form flips over. Li'oilam e moloch. We're picking up the Gemara. You notice the fifth line of the wide lines where the triangle flipped over. The oilam e moloch. L'tuma utara sviro le rebuto. Devlat sheni keman te'isei dami. I will tell you that Rabbi Yehuda's approach is that the second child is a factor and has to be reckoned with regard to Tumah and Tara. And the Tanaic source that we read just above is not talking about a twin birth. The Chitanya Hi, the source above, is talking about B'Pesach Habo B'Tumah. So there's no second birth. We're talking about a day 40 since a first birth, and we'll talk about a male birth 40 days earlier, and day 40 is a real day 40, and we said, but she's still considered Tameah with regard to sacrifices, so how can they bring a Korban Pesach on her behalf? And so the Gemara says that the source is talking about a Pesach Habo B'Tumah. That's a case where the public is Tameh, and when the public is Tameh, so then even if a person is Tomei, the Korban Pesach is brought. The Gemara asks, Umi Ochla, can she eat from it? We're talking about this woman who is who's experienced a birth, V'hotnan. We have a Mishnah that says, Pesach Abba B'tumah, lo yochlu mimenu, zovim v'zovos nidos v'yoldos. A Pesach Abba B'tumah really is a case where the public is Tomei Tumas Mace as a result of defilement to the dead. That is the type of Tumah that we make an exception for and say that if the public is in a state of Tumas Mace, so the Korban Pesach can be brought for them and it can be eaten by them. However, that allowance or leniency does not extend to all kinds of Tumah. For example, these four examples, Zovim, Zovos, Nidos, Vyoldos, we dashed underline Yoldos because that's relevant to us, they don't have this leniency. Only for Tumas Meis do we have it. So we're back to square one. Hahi, so the Gemara responds with an inverted triangle. Hahi dolo achli kilo tavilon. The halacha that a yoledes doesn't eat from the Korban Pesach, that is only so long as she hasn't immersed herself in a mikveh. Kitanya hahi, the case of the yoledes and day 40, the shochtin vizorkin oleh, that we do sacrifice and sprinkle the blood of the Korban Pesach for her in anticipation of her eating it. The ha tavla, she already immersed herself on day 8 since the birth. In other words, there were initial 7 days of real tuma, and following those 7 days, she already immersed herself. So the Gemara asks, Ihachi, if it's all dependent on immersion, then Mishmini delay hu dechazya. From day 8, she was already fit, according to your approach. Why does the source above, where we have the Toshma triangle, number one source above, mention the preparation of the Korban Pesach for only on day 40? You could have used an example much closer to her actual giving birth on day 8. The Gemara responds, Mishmini lo chazio, the kosovar tfula yom dezav kezav domi. On day 8, she would not have been fit because she would have the status of true. She went to the mikveh, and that's called a tvul yom. So that a tvul yom of a zav is not enough. In order to get out of that, you need to have you need to have sundown also. Sundown, which hasn't taken place yet for this yoledes, because her immersion may be on day 8, but the expected sundown is at the end of the 40-day period to get her out of the tvul yom status. We in the Gemara used a borrowed expression, namely tvul yom dezav kezav, but for our purposes, we can be saying a tvul yom of a yoledes has the din of the initial tuma period. So that's why it didn't use the example of day 8. The Gemara asks, well, I hachi, b'yoyim arboyim nami lo chazya. Well, on day 40, she's also then not fit. Now, there's an assumption here that as long as she hasn't brought her birth sacrifices, she's considered we'll call a mechuser kippurim. She's lacking, kippurim is the sacrifices. She's lacking the sacrifices, so that the assumption is that as long as the sacrifices haven't been brought, so she has the initial yoledes status. Or in using the example before, that a mechuser kippurim of a zav is like a zav mamish, like an actual zav. The Gemara responds, lai b'yoyim mem chazya, on day 40 she is actually fit. You'll say, well, on day 40, but isn't she lacking her full tara? Kosovar mechuser kippurim dezav lav kezav domi. The fact that she's lacking having brought her sacrifices, that doesn't make her like a zav. So as far as we are concerned, she will have already immersed herself already from day 8, and on day 40, the after sundown of day 40, she'll be able to eat from the Korban Pesach. As far as the fact that she hasn't brought her sacrifices, that doesn't prevent, that doesn't give her the status of her original Tuma status. So that day 40, which turns out to be the 14th of Nisan, this woman can have the Korban Pesach prepared for her. Ulo Rava, the Gemara asks, Di Omar, Mechuser Kippurim Dezav Kezav Domi, Ha Mas Niso Hechi Mitaretz Lo. According to Rava, that says that a person who needs to bring sacrifices as a result of their tuma, and as long as they haven't brought the sacrifices, they have the initial tuma status. So how do you explain this Tanaic source? How can we allow a woman who has given birth and hasn't yet brought her birth sacrifices, how can we allow a Korban Pesach to be prepared for her? After all, she won't be able to partake of it. The 40th day is the 14th of Nisan, and the 41st day, which is the day that she would ordinarily bring her sacrifices, it's already too late. It's already the 15th of Nisan. Omar Rav Ashi, Rava Mitaritz Lo, B'yoim Mem Liyitziras Zohar, U'v'yoim Shmoinim Liyitziras Nekevav Rabbi Shmuel Hi. Rava explains the source with the 40 and 80 days mentioned above in a completely different fashion. He says it's not talking about day 40 of Yemei Tohar since a birth, but it's talking about day 40 from the very beginning of the pregnancy, day 40 since conception. Day 40 of a male conception, or day 80 since a female conception, female child. The Omar, according to Rabbi Shmuel, said Lezochar Mem V'Echod L'Nekevo Shmoinim V'Echod. That means that a child isn't considered to be an embryo until day 41 in the case of a male, or day 81 in the case of a female. Before that, it's considered water, mere water. And therefore, if you have a woman who on the 14th of Nisan, which is the day that the Korban Pesach is to be prepared, and on that day, it just so happens to be day 40 since the woman conceived, and she miscarries that entity, it doesn't make her Tamea, because she didn't reach day 41 or 81. Therefore, she is still Tahora. The Gemara asks, but Sof, Tepuk Li, the Tamea Hi Mishum Nida, if she experienced this emergence of whatever she had been pregnant with, whatever she had achieved since that conception, there is a release from her body, and that wouldn't that release be accompanied by blood, and that blood would be tome, and she would be a nida. So as such, how can the Korban Pesach be prepared for her? After all, she would be a nida, and that makes her tamea for a 7-day period. The Gemara says, "Beleda yeveshta." It was a bloodless type of miscarriage. Ihachi mai lememra. If it's bloodless, then it's obvious that you have a woman 40 days, but not more, since conception, and the water emerged without any blood. So of course she is Tahora. My lememri is, what do I have to tell you this for? Answer, Mahu detemo, e efshur lepsichas hakever beloi dam. One might have thought that it's impossible for the womb, the kever is a word for the womb, to open and release substance without blood. Komashmon de efshur lepsichas hakever beloi dam. The Gemara reveals that it is possible to have the opening of a womb and a release without accompanying blood. The blood is the substance that would have made her Tamea. But since you're saying Efshul Psichas HaKever below Dam, she is not Tamea. So far, just to review what we've done is with this Gemara, is we attempted to resolve our initial question as far as Rabbi Yehuda's stance to Yemei Tuma Vatara generated by the second birth. And we found in the course of our discussion that the source that we brought in as under our Toshma number one doesn't deal necessarily with a twin birth, and hence we don't have any information to conclude our question. Omar Rav Shmaya Toshma. We continue in the Gemara. You'll notice here in the space to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, you see a triangle Toshma with a number 2 along with it. This is the second attempt by way of sources to resolve the original question. Here we are opening with a quote from a pasuk. We've in the margin included this pasuk, Vayikra, Perek Yudbeis, pasuk Hey. It says in the pasuk, Vishishim Yoim Visheshis Yomim Teshev Al Demei Tahara. This is described, the pasuk describes a woman that had experienced a birth of a female offspring, and it says that for a period of 66 days, she is Tahora, means even if she sees any blood, she will be allowed to be with her husband. She's allowed in intimacy. So in the pasuk, the word shishim appears, which is 60, in addition to the 6 that appears a little later. Shishim, yachol bein ritzufin bein mefuzarin. The shishim number, 60 days, is that to be understood both in the case of consecutive, ritzufin or consecutive, meaning without any miscarriages in the middle, bein mefuzarin, even if there is a miscarriage? So how do we understand the shishim? Is it something that is experienced whether it be a consecutive or even if it's broken up? Talmud Lomar Yoim. The word Yom appears together with shishim. Ma Yoim Ratzuf. Just like a day is a period of a consecutive 24 hours. Af shishim kulon ritzufin. So too, the 60 is an example of something that is our consecutive days. It's a number that one counts in a consecutive fashion and not in a broken up fashion. Money, who would the author of this source be? Ilemo Rabbonon. If you were to think it's the Rabbonon, well, mi islei the Rabbonon mufuzaren. Do the Rabbonon, do they even have a concept of something broken up? Mufuzaren means in separate sections. After all, they, in viewing births, place all the emphasis on whatever subsequent birth there was. If you have a second birth taking place within the malois of the first birth, we saw the Rabbanan in the Mishnah on Daf Tesam and Beis that says it starts the counting all over again. Not only the counting, but that is what generates the sacrifice. And we said the nafkamina from that is the practical point is that if there's a third birth that takes place within 80 days of the second birth, even though it's not 80 of the first, there's still the third birth will not generate the need for a new sacrifice. So that as far as the Rabbanon are concerned, every subsequent birth generates, let's say, starts the clock over again. So you don't have a case of Mifuzorin. Elo, Lav, Rabbi Yehuda, he. Rather, we'll have to say that this source is according to Rabbi Yehuda, who does have this concept of a breakup, or who has a concept, or a potential concept, we'll say, of a breakup. And we say that on the basis of his emphasis of the first birth as far as korban requirements are concerned. So, nevertheless, even though he has that concept, from the fact that this Rabbi Yehuda source mentions that the 60 days must be consecutive, Shma mino chumra islei l'Rabbi Yehuda kulo leslei, namely that Rabbi Yehuda will count only from the second birth without making any allowance for makeup days for the first birth. Makeup days would have meant that the counting of those 66 days could be done in sections, which is called mefuzar. But from this source, we see we don't allow for that type of counting, which indicates to us that all of the tumen tahara will be counted only from the second birth, and no makeup days for the first birth. And that's what is meant here, that chumra islei rebuta kula leslei. Kula meaning a leniency, which would have been an extended period of Yemei Tohar, of days she'd be allowed to be with her husband as a result of making up the lost days from the first birth. The Gemara rejects this. Loi. Let us not conclude that Rebuta holds only from Chumrah. Li'olam Rabbanon Hi. This source that we read at triangle number 2 is in accordance with the Rabbanon. The Hocha B'mayaskinon, and what is the source talking about? After all, we said before that the Rabbanon always place an emphasis on the whatever subsequent birth there was, so that there wouldn't even be a Havamina of Mefuzorin that I would need a Pasuk to dispel. No, there is a case of Mefuzorin that what one could have imagined. And what's that? He says, the Gemara says, V'ocha b'maskina l'yoledes zohar mitoch shmoinim shel nekeva. Where she, a woman experienced an initial female birth, which is an 80-day period, and during that period she had a male child, or a male miscarriage that took place. Let us look at the Rashi for this. We're looking at a Rashi that you'll find toward the end of the page, about 5-6 lines from the end, Le'olam Rabbanon Hi, V'heichi Domi Mefuzarin. How can you have, according to the Rabbanon, this concept of a broken up counting? B'yoledes Zohar B'soch Shmonim Shel Nekeva, where she had a male miscarriage within 80 days of a female birth. She Yemei Tohar Shel Zohar, the Yemei Tohar, that's the 40-day period of a male birth, Kulin, and complete. They get finished, they can finish off Kodim L'Shmonim D'Nekeva Rishona, being that 80 is twice as large a number as 40, you can have the 40 days of the male birth starting and ending within the 80-day Yemei Tohar of the Nekeva. Uvechiai Gavna, Yemei Tohar Shel Sheni Kolin Koidem Yemei Tohar de Rishon. In such a case where the Yemei Tohar of the second birth, the male birth, finish before the Yemei Tohar of the first birth, which is an 80-day period, so Leslu Rabbonon de Mivlad Sheni Limnu, the Rabbonon don't hold that you will count from the second birth, Ubayla Shlumi Yemei Tohar de Rishon, and I would have thought that there would be makeup of the Yemei Tohar that were lost by the fact that she was Tameah for 7 days as a result of the second birth. The Osakrol Ashminan, the Lo Mashlimin Labosar Pei Deleda Rishona Shiva Keneged Zayin Yemei Tuma the Zohar Shefsiku Beintayim Elo Misheni Mone. So the Pasuk is saying that there is not going to be any makeup of the of those missing days as a result of the second birth, but all the counting takes place from the second birth. And this is all because of the Gzeres HaKosov of Yom. We want days, we want our Yemei Tumah and Tahara to be in a consecutive fashion without having to break it up and have makeup. The Gemara asks, Soif Soif, Shalmin Yoimi de Kadmo, the Adkan de Basro Lo Shalmin. According to this scenario, the days that we account for the second birth finish off. They start and finish before the 80 days of the first birth. In order to appreciate what the Gemara is bothered by, let's look at the Rashi. 3 lines from the bottom. Soif soif loy mishkachas hochi de shalmin shmoinim de nekeva komaisa vi ad kan mem de zohar lo shalmin. You won't have a case where the 80 days of the nekeva finish when the 40 days of the zohar have not finished. De lo mishkachas leida zohar ad Nundalid the Nekeva. You won't have the birth of a male a male miscarriage, until day 54 since the female birth. How do you account for that? Yudalid de Tuma de Nekeva. You have 14 days that were forbidden in intimacy under the initial 14 days since that female birth. And then Umem, another 40, the Yetziras Hazachar, another 40 days for the formation of a significant embryo. The Kevon Dimoninon Levlad Sheni Lerabonon, and since according to the Rabbonon we count from the second birth, we should just say Lo Mishkachas Mefuzarin. You don't have a case of Mefuzarin because the second birth will have taken place on day 54, and that generates its own 40-day period. That takes you out of the 80 days of the Nekeva. So the Pasuk isn't giving me a chidush regarding a scenario that might have otherwise happened. In other words, what we thought before was that the 40-day example would have been sandwiched within the 80-day of the Nekeva birth, and the Pasuk is telling me that I don't make up the lost week of that the male birth caused. Well, that whole scenario doesn't get started because you don't have the 40-day period of the male birth being enveloped, contained completely within the 80 days of the 80 days of the female birth. The Gemara answers, Elo Mishkachas lo l'rabbanan. Here the Gemara is still trying to tell us that the source was not going to be a Rebbe Yehuda source, but rather it's a Rabbanan source. And you could have that scenario of a male birth period contained within the female birth period. It's Mishkachas lo l'rabbanan b'yoledes te'oimim, where the woman was pregnant with twins. Nekeva Kadmaisa v'zochar basra. The first to emerge was the female birth, and the male came out afterwards. Ukagoin dilidise l'zochar basra be'esrim l'yoyme tahara. This esrim is a day 20, but it's an arbitrary number. The example here is that the second twin, in other words, the male twin, emerged on day 20. Day 20 of an 80-day period. That's Be'esrim L'yoyme Tara. Deboi L'minkat Lei Shiva Yoyme Tuma Deleida. That male birth on day 20 will generate a 7-day period of Tuma, where this mother just had this twin, this male twin birth come out after the female, the first twin, which was a female. You have this 7-day period of Tuma, and that is what this source, the source above, was telling me, that she doesn't make up those lost days, but rather we'll just simply count a straight till day 80, and that's it. The Hochi Ka'omar, and here the Gemara presents the source that triangle number 2 featured in a restated fashion. Yochol Hecha Diolda Tumim. Could it be that where a woman has a twin pregnancy and she gives birth, Nekeva Meikara Vazachar Lebesof, first the female and then the male, Tafsik Tuma Deledo Bemitzi, V'nimni lo shisha v'shisha mifuzaren, that we would say that the Yemei Tuma of the second birth serve as an interruption, and I would have a makeup period. In other words, I would have had initial Yemei Tohar before the male emerged, and then make up the missing Yemei Tohar later on. Tamud lomar yoim, ma yoim kulo ratzuf. just like a day is a consecutive unit of time, af shishim kulam ritzufim, so too the 60 that is part of the Yemei Tohar must be consecutive. And when we say must be consecutive, meaning that there is no makeup of lost Yemei Tohar later on. Of course they're not actually consecutive, because you have the male birth and Tuma days interrupting. But what we mean when we say consecutive is consecutive to the exclusion of making up lost days that had been started before the Tumas Leida. Once again, what has happened in the Gemara is that the source that we thought that was going to reflect Shitas Reb Yehuda that we brought in Toshma number 2 is not Reb Yehuda, but it was the Rabbanon, and hence we go on in the Gemara to seek out what's Reb Yehuda's opinion with regard to the Yemei Tumah V'Tara of a Leida Shnia. Toshma, Omar Abaye, Toshma, Shloishim. This is taken from the Pasuk dealing with a male birth that mentioned Shloshim Yoim v'Shloshe Yomim. So it says Shloshim Yochel Bein Ritzufin Bein Mefuzarin, the 30 days that are given to her of the Yemei Tohar. Could it be whether they're consecutive or broken up? Tamad Lomar Yoim Ma Yoim Kuloi Ritzuf Af Shloshim Ritzufin. Just like a day is a consecutive unit of time, so too the Yemei Tohar are to be consecutive. Now, when you see the word Mefuzarin, let us glance at the Rashi that you find. He's a little bit out of place, if you will, but it's at the top of Amud Beis. We're reading Rashi from the top of Yud Amud Beis, Mefuzarin, Klomar, Sheposku lo Shiva Yemei Tuma, the Zohar, Yemei Tohar, the Nekeva. The concept of Mefuzarin is, as we've been explaining till now, where there was an interruption of the 7 days of a male birth, the 7 Tuma days, were interrupting the Yemei Tohar, the Nekeva, V'leisiv lo Shiva Achrini la'achar shemoinim l'leida rishona, and then we would make up 7 days afterwards. That would be make up for the lost days of the leida rishona. Let's now turn back to our Gemara. So we have this Tanaic source that we just read, that the Yemei, the Shloshim, the 30, which actually 33 days of Tohar must be consecutive to the exclusion of the idea of making up for lost days. Moni ha, who is the author of this source? Ilema Rabbonon, if it were authored by the Rabbonon, mi is lehu l'Rabbonon Mefuzarin. Do the Rabbonon even hold from the concept of Mefuzarin? After all, the Rabbonon count all their dinim from the Leida Shnia. The Leida Shnia sort of like resets the clock all over again. Ha Rabbonon Levlad Sheni Manya. The Rabbonon, as we said, they do all their counting from the second birth. Ela Lav Reb Yehuda Hi. This source must be in accordance with Reb Yehuda. And it said in this source, Ritzufin, that the you may Tara must be Ritzufin. Ushmamina Humra Isle Kula Lesle. We see from this that Reb Yehuda doesn't say that the second birth serves as an interruption causing me to make up the lost Tohar days of the first. That therefore is conclusive, showing us that Reb Yehuda holds only from Chumra, from he holds that we go in the direction of stringency and not leniency. The leniency, once again, just to review a point we've made already again a few times, the leniency would be to enable there to be makeup days of the lost Tohar days that the first birth was entitled to. And those Tohar days would say that she is allowed to experience intimacy
with her husband, even though she is experiencing blood. But so we're saying there's no makeup days.
The Oid Omer of Ashi Toshma. This we're calling source number 4. Visheshes Yomim. We saw this pasuk quoted earlier. We had Shishim Yomim, Visheshes Yomim. Yochel Bein Ritzufin Bein Mefuzorin. Talmud Lomar Shishim. Ma Shishim Kulon Ritzufin. Af Shisha Kulon Ritzufin. The Rashi explains on Sheshes Yomim. Rashi says Sheshes Yomim Kegoin Hipila Laachar Samach Gimel De Torah De Nekeva. A woman who had experienced a female birth, and on day 63 of the 66 days of technically speaking, it's day 77, as Rashi says, Shein Ayin Zayin Luleidos, on day 77 since her female birth, she experienced a miscarriage on that day 77. V'hoya lo limnois oid shloisha yomim. Well, from day 77 till the end was another 3 days of Yemei Tohar. V'pila v'nitme'u. Well, she miscarried on that day 77 and became Tmeya. Yochol yitnu lo shloisha achirim keneged shloisha elush dinitmu. Do you think we will give her another 3 days that she lost? The 3 days that were that she had become tmeya because of this miscarriage. So will she make them up? Denevu vov mifuzarin. If we were to say that, so since day 77 represented the last week of her Yemei Tohar, so she would have had experienced 4 days of those last 6 days. We'll say she experienced 3 days of those last 6 days, and then there was this miscarriage. So it would be 3 before the miscarriage, and then 3 after the Yemei Tuma of this miscarriage. That would be a case of 6 days Mefuzarin, 3 before the miscarriage, and then the 3 that she lost out would be made up afterwards. The Hochaloksiv Yoim Ela Yomim, here the Pasuk uses the word Yomim in the plural, the Mashma Filu Mufuzarin. It sounds like even if the 6 were in 2 sections, it would still be legitimate. So therefore, the Brisa says, I learned from Shishim, just like Shishim had to be completely consecutive, and we proved that earlier, so too the Shisha must be consecutive. Money, who was the author of this source? Ileimu Rabbanon, mi is luhul Rabbanon Mufuzarin. If this were authored by the Rabbanon, but did the Rabbanon hold from Mufuzarin to begin with? Harmi Rabbanon levlat sheni manya. The Rabbanon already said that we do our counting from the second birth, and that second miscarriage will bring along with it many, many more days beyond day 80 of that first birth. So there's no Mufuzarin concept, according to the Rabbanon, to begin with. And the source makes reference to Mufuzarin, but simply says we don't count that way. So Elolav Rabbi Yehuda, the source must be, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Ushma mino chumra is lay, kula les lay. We see from here that Rabbi Yehuda holds from the chumra idea, and not the kula. The kula would have involved the making up of lost Tahara days that are due or owed to the first birth. No, he doesn't hold from that. And therefore, so Shema Mino, with this we can resolve our original question and say that even Rabbi Yehuda, when it comes to Tumah Tahara, counts from the second birth and doesn't give any makeup days for the first birth. So that would be conclusive.
The Mishnah. Elu Mevian Korban Oilav Yored. The following are a list of those that bring a sin offering based on their income level or their asset value.
al shmias koil. This is a person who denied knowing testimony under oath. The al bitui sfosayim, one who had sworn to act and violated his oath. The al tumas mikdosh v'kadoshav, one who was in violation of the laws of purity, that are ritual purity necessary for entrance to the Beis HaMikdash and the eating of sacrifices. V'hayoledes, a woman who gave birth. V'hametzora, person who experienced this skin discoloration, which classifies the individual as a metzora, an individual with a certain level or high level of tuma associated with him. These are, in a sense, exceptions to the general practice with regard to sin offerings, that when you see a sin offering brought, it is an animal offering without taking into consideration what a person can afford. These are exceptions. These are cases where, though a sin offering is brought, its value or its cost its type, animal, you have bird, and meal offering. All three possibilities exist within the realm of a fluctuating price sin offering. The Tanaic source that Gemara opens up with, Tanu Rabbanan, you see a framed section. We continue in this topic. Yesh mevi bedalus vashirus. There are those that there is an allowance made for dalus, is a reference to a bird offering, and ashirus is an animal offering, ashirus meaning wealth. Vyesh may be bedalus, ubedale dalus. And there are those that, in addition to the dalus, the poor man's offering, there is an extreme poor offering, dale dalus, a reference to a meal offering. Yoledes mevia bedalus vashirus. The woman who gave birth has these possibilities: a bird offering, which is made of two birds, and ashirus is a woman who, having give birth, would bring a sheep plus bird. The woman who gave birth is expected to bring an ola and a chatos, two different types of sacrifices, in the event that she is impoverished. She would be able to bring two birds. One is an ola, one is a chatos. And in the event that she is a woman of means, she would bring a sheep as an ola, and thus the bird, we could say the same bird, as a chatos. Mitzora mevi bedalus v'ashirus. Shmias hakol ubitus v'sayim v'tumas mikdosh v'kadoshav. These three examples, Mevian Bedalus, Vidale Dalus, in addition to the Dalus possibility that already exists, there is also the Dale Dalus possibility for them. So that you see in this list of examples, the Yoledes does not have a meal offering option, and the Mitzora also doesn't have a meal offering option. Tanya Idoch. Yesh mevi echod tachas echod. This source opens up with a list of possibilities, and they will be explained as the source goes on. So during our initial read of the first part, we won't offer much by way of explanation. So you have four examples. Yesh mevi echod tachas echod. Yesh mevi shnayim tachas shnayim, yesh mevi shnayim tachas echod, yesh mevi echod tachas shnayim. Mikan ata lomed la'asirus ho'efa bepruta. From this, we eventually will learn that the meal offering, which is brought in this quantity, an asirus ho'efa is a quantity of flour that's brought, and its value will be bepruta. One pruta, a very small type of coin, and that would be the expected value of the asirus eifa. Of course, as we mentioned earlier, all of this will be explained as we go on. Yoledes mevio achas tachas achas. What does that mean? This was the first example in the list that we didn't explain yet. But the woman who bore a child, and it's time for her to bring her sacrifices, she will bring a bird, a singular bird, in replacement of the animal that she otherwise would have brought had she been a woman of means. And what do we, how do we explain that? Preda achas v'oif tachas keves. She brings her, the woman who gave birth will bring a chatos oif that she brings anyway. Preda is a reference to a singular bird. When you have a pair of birds, the term kain is used, kuf nun, and here the woman brings a singular chatos bird, and oif tachas keves, this is what we meant, achas tachas echod tachas echod, a singular ola bird instead of the keves that she would have brought as an ola. So you have one replacing one, namely the one ola bird replaces the keves animal that she would have had to bring. The chatos bird she brings anyway. Mitzora shtei preidin tachas shnei kvosim. In the case of a mitzora, had he been a person of means, besides the osham that a mitzora brings, he also brings a chatos and an ola. In the case that the mitzora can't afford a chatos and ola animals, two animals, he brings two birds, one a chatos, one an ola. So that's an example of two replacing two. Shmias HaKol Ubitus Vosayim V'tumas Mikdash V'Kadoshav. These examples of people that are obligated to bring a sin offering. Mevi'in Shnei Preidin Tachas Kivso Achas. If they were people of means, they would have brought a sin offering in the form of a sheep. If they don't have means, they will bring two birds to replace the one sheep. Umavian, and that example of two birds to replace one sheep is what we meant before of Shnayim Tachas Echod. That was example number two in the opening list of this source. Umavian Bedale Dalus Asiris Efa Tachas Shtei Tpredim. If they can't afford even the two birds, they are extremely impoverished. So these three people, the three violators of the Shmias Kol, B'Tisrams, B'Tumas Mikdash V'Kadoshav, will be entitled to bring a meal offering. Now that meal offering then is a replacement of the two birds. So that would be an example of one meal offering. That's one which replaces two. And that was alluded to before when we said there are those that bring Achad Tachas Shnayim. And that we saw in the example above, example number four. So that here we saw Shnei Preidim Tachas Kivso Achas. That was an example, that was illustrated in example three of two that are brought instead of one, the two birds instead of one sheep. And if they're very impoverished, so they'll bring one meal offering instead of two birds. That was example four of someone who's maybe Echod Tachas Shnayim. Kotoni, it had been taught, Mikan Atolome Lasir Soefo Shihi Bepruta. You'll notice a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. This can be aligned with the arrow a few lines above, showing you where this quote came from. Here the Gemara asks, Minolon, from where do we know that the Asir Soefo is one Pruta? The Tono Rabbonon, we have a source that says Ha'oimer Hareolai Besela Lemizbeach. If a person accepts on himself in a vow to bring a korban, a sacrifice purchased through one sela. The sela is a type of coin. It's an amount that would result in this person having to bring Mevi Keves. He'll bring a sheep. She'ein Dover Korov Besela Ela Keves. A keves is a sheep that is the only type of sacrifice that would correspond to a sela in value. So if a person accepted upon himself in a vow to bring a sacrifice worth a sela, he will be expected to buy a sheep. Mimai, well, from where do we know that? Before going further in the Gemara, let's glance in the outside margin where we see our no say heading, under which we've written Minolon Lasir So Efa Shibaputa. From where do we know that the Asir So Efa, the meal offering brought in that quantity, must be worth a pruta? Under our Mivneh heading, you'll notice triangles appear, and they're called a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a back and forth give and take style of Gemara discussion, which you can see continues down quite a number of lines. With the narrow point facing up, they will represent a response, a tshuva, and with the triangle flipped over, with the point facing down, they will represent a kushya question. So the question was raised, from where do I know that the Asir Sa'efa is a pruta? So we began by answering that this will eventually be determined through the knowledge that a sheep is worth a sela. What we'll eventually have to see is what's the relationship in value between a sheep and a meal offering. So the question right now was, how do I know that a sheep is a sela? Answer, mi de omar rachmona el osham bekesef shkolim. An el osham is a ram, it's a two-year-old sheep. And it says in this pasuk, the two-year-old sheep is two sela. Shkolim, the word shkolim means two sloyim. So, michlal, we can infer from this, the keves besela, that a keves is a sela, umidichtiv keves ben shnosoi, or keves ben shana, from the fact that there's a posuk that says a keves is a one-year-old animal, michlal de ayol ben shnayim, that an ayol is older. A keves is a sheep, and it's called one-year-old. So even though the word ayol doesn't accompany an age, we infer that the ayol is a more adult creature than a keves. The keves is a sheep, one-year-old. Therefore, we will infer that an ayol is a two-year-old animal. And being that it's 2 years old, we also can appreciate that its value was shkolim, was two sloyim, leading us to conclude that the animal that's younger is one sela. Utnan, another relevant piece of information, is what we had seen in an earlier Mishnah that said, Omdu kinin bo bayom biravasayim, a pair of birds, as a result of Rabbi Gamliel's intervention, were devalued to the value of a rivosayim. That's a quarter of a dinar. So we know so far that a sheep that would be qualified as a sin offering is a sela, and the pair of birds is worth a quarter of a dinar. What is the relationship between one sela and a reva dinar? So we will see that it is 1/16. Very simply, because 4 dinar fit into one sela. If that be the case, a quarter of a dinar will be 1/16 of a sela. Umidechos rachmona olei the dalus lemeheve chad mishis aser bashirus, from that which the Torah expresses or shows its compassion on a person who is of limited means to buy a bird offering, which is 1/16 of what he otherwise would have had to bring, namely the sheep. Chos Rachmona olei de dale dalus lemeheve chad mishis esrei bedalus. Then it would stand to reason that the lower level, or in this case the lowest level, the Dalei Dalus level, will be 1/16 of that which immediately preceded it, namely the Dalus level. Imkain. So at this point, though, before we read the Imkain, at this point we are seeing how we get to the value of the Asiras HaEfah. The Asiras HaEfah is 1/16 of a Reva Dinar, which itself was 1/16 of a Sela. So we have to calculate then what 1/16 of a quarter of a dinar is. The Gemara will deal with this, and the hope would have been that this would be a pruta. However, you can see we have an inverted triangle. That indicates a kushya. We're now about to raise a question that will last a few lines. We have a long question marking that accompanies this. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a kuf encircled with a descending dashed line. At this point, the Gemara asks, Imkain, dalus kamohavya. Dalus, what was the rate? Riva, a quarter of a dinar. We said that was 1/16 of a sela. V'kama priti b'riva, how many prutos are in a riva? Arboim v'tamne priti, there are 48 prutos. We do have a little chart that accompanies this sugya that you can see in the margin. So that a quarter of a dinar is made of 48 prutos. That's a rev of a dinar. So now, what's 1/16 of that? V'chad mishis osur de dalus kamahavi. What is 1/16 of that? Tlosa priti. 3 prutos. Well, v'katani, we had a source that said, mikana tolome lasir soefo bepruta. Amai pruta. Why do you say 1 pruta? Armis asiris hoefo. Dalei Dalus Hu. We know that the Asiras HaEfah is the meal offering. It's the amount of flour brought in a meal offering, which is what's brought as Dalei Dalus, the lowest income level, would bring this as their sin offering, this meal offering. The Amris, Chad Mishis Sori De Dalus Hu, that the meal offering is 1/16 of the dalus. Ho hashvinon the gimel priti havyon. Well, according to this calculation, it's 3 pruta. Just to go over that again, the asiras HaEfah was dalei dalus, and that was expected to be 1/16 of the dalus. And that was itself a quarter of a dinar, and the quarter of a dinar we saw was 48 prutos. What's 1/16 of 48? 3 times 16 is 48. So the cheshbon doesn't work out to what we claimed. We claimed that the asiras HaEfah, which was dalei dalus, is 1 pruta, when it turns out to be 3 prutos. The Gemara answers, we're calling this the second stage. Tana miyoledes yolif. The Tana, who said the Asiras HaEfah is 1 pruta, learns from a relationship in values focusing on the childbearing woman and her sacrifices. Demasio preido achas tachas keves. She, when she is in her dalus mode, instead of bringing the keves as an ola, she brings a bird, a singular bird, as an ola. What is the relative value of a singular bird to the keves? Well, we saw above that 2 birds were a quarter of a dinar. So 1 bird is half of that. It would be not a quarter of a dinar, but an eighth of a dinar. What is the relationship of an eighth of a dinar to 1 sela? The sela was the keves. So she, this, the yoledes, is in effect bringing a bird instead of a keves. Well, 1/8 of a dinar is there are 32 of them in one sela. Dehavya chad mitalsin vitrain de kevis. That's 1/32 of a sela. So the dalus is 1/32. The Gemara, now, with that information, we were supposed to come to the conclusion that a Dalei Dalus will be a Pruta. However, we ask, the Ad Kan Dalei Dalus Kamahave, Dalei Dalus, which is the meal offering, how much is that? Well, we saw above a relationship of 1/16. Chad mishis osar v'dalus. It was 1/16 of the dalus. This is a point that we had mentioned earlier. Well, ki hechi diyolif mikeves v'ayo. That was what we saw earlier when we spoke about the two birds brought instead of a keves. We established that there was a 1/16 relationship. So when you have now your Yoledes, where we know that her bird, her singular bird, was 1/32 of the Keves, which would have been equal to an eighth of a dinar. And now we go from that, we take 1/16 of the eighth of a dinar. So what in effect we're doing, we know that an eighth of a dinar was 24 prutos. So we're now going to take 1/16 of 24. That's chad mishis osar bedalus. Ki hechi diolif mikeves v'ayil. Ad kan pruto opalga havi. However, the problem with that is that you're taking 1/16 of 24 prutos, that's 1.5 prutos. And we said that the Dalei Dalus Asir Seifa was 1 pruto, not 1.5 prutos. The Gemara answers, Omar Rova, Kula Milsa Mioledes Yolif. All of the relationships in values we are going to learn from Yoledes. The Hochi Ka'omar. And thusly, we are to understand this calculation. Midechos rachmona ole de dalus mevechad mitalsin train bashirus. Just like the Torah shows its consideration in dalus to be 1/32 of the ashirus, the person of means. Umai hi yoledes. Where do you find this 1/32 relationship? You find it in the case of the yoledes. Namely, she brings only one bird instead of a sheep. She brings an ola bird instead of the sheep that would have been an ola. Well, chosnami rachmona ole de dalei dalus. So too is the relationship with regard to the Dalei Dalus. Not 1/16 of the Dalus, but 1/32 of the Dalus. Mahi, what is Dalei Dalus? Asiris ho'efo. Lemeheve chad mintalsin v'train bedalus. That Asiris ho'efo will be 1/32 of the Dalus. Now, just to review, the Dalus we established before was 1/32 of the Sela, which got you to 1/8 of a dinar, which is also equal to 24 prutos. Now we're telling you that the Dalei Dalus is going to be 1/32 of that. So it's 1/32 of 24 prutos. What is that? It happens to be 3/4 of a pruta. Well, ihachi, if so, then riva de pruta have, or there's a girsa, the original girsa was nechi riva de pruta have. Nechi means less, meaning it's 1/4 of a pruta missing from a pruta, which is, in simpler terms, three-quarters of a pruta.
Let's go over that again. 1/32 of 24 is three-quarters. And the source above said that we're expected to bring a dale dalus is one pruta. The Gemara answers, Hochinami, you're right. You're right that it comes out to three-quarters of a pruta. Ela, the lavo rach aro levesuye pochus mi pruta lamokom. However, it's not derech eretz to bring a sacrifice worth less than a pruta to the Almighty, so that you're expected to spend a full pruta in the purchase of the asirus ha'epa, sacrifice, a sin offering, the meal sin offering that would be brought in the in that state, meaning of Dali Dallas. The Mishnah goes on to discuss the topic of Shivcha. We had mentioned in previous Mishnayos one who has intimacy with a Shivcha. On the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading, the Nosei, under which we've written Hevdelim Bein Habo Al Shivcha LeHabo Al Kol Arayas. Differences between one who has intimacy with a Shivcha versus one who has intimacy with other forbidden relatives. So the Mishnah, Ma Bein Shivcha LeKol Arayas Shelo Shavsu Lehen Lo Ba'Einish VeLo BaKorban. What are the differences between a Shivcha and other forbidden relatives, where we find that there is a distinction, there is non-equality between Shivcha and the rest of the forbidden relatives with regard to the punishment nor the sacrifice? This will now be explained. Shekol ha'arayos b'chatos v'shivcha b'osham. One who has relations with other forbidden relatives, and he does so unknowingly, he'll bring a sin offering, a chatos. With regard to the shivcha, he brings an osham sacrifice. Kol arayos, echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha shavin b'makos uv'korban. With regard to intimacy between male and female in forbidden relatives, the male and female participants, if they are knowing violators, so they will both receive the onesh. If they were warned regarding lashings, they'll both get lashings. And if they did the forbidden intimacy in a state of shogeg, of an unwitting state, so they will bring a korban. Both the man and woman involved will bring a sacrifice. So we find with regard to other arayas this sense of equality. Ubishivcha lo hishva. However, with regard to intimacy with the shivcha, you don't have this balance or this equality. Lo ho'ish li'isha b'makos. The man is not like the woman who will receive lashings. The shivcha gets lashed, and only the shivcha, not the man. The lo ho'isha li'ish b'korban. And with regard to the bringing of a sacrifice, only the man brings a sacrifice, not the woman. Kolarayos also bohen hamare kigomer v'chayav al kol biobia. With regard to other forbidden relatives, the Torah views the ma'are. Ma'are is a partial insertion when it comes to committing the act of intimacy. Ma'are is a reference to a partial insertion that is considered like a complete insertion, and there is a separate chiyuv, a separate obligation generated by each act of intimacy. Vezu chomer hichmir v'shivcha. The Mishnah continues at the top of Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. She'osu bo hamezid kishogeg. The Shita Mekubetzis in Ois Aleph explains Sha'osa bo hamezid kishogeg pirusho ish mevi korban. A man, the man who has relations with the shifa, will bring a sacrifice. Bein kishu mezid, bein kishu shogeg. Whether he is
whether he does so knowingly or he does so unknowingly. Aval isha vadai im hi shogeges ptura min amalkis. A woman who, the shifcha that is, who, if she's involved with this act of intimacy unwittingly, she will definitely be exempt from the ordinary punishment she would receive. She'll be exempt from the lashings. The Mishnah continues at the top. Ezo Shifcha. Actually, before we continue with that, there is a relevant point mentioned in Rashi. The Mishnah had mentioned that all the Arayas, they made the partial insertion like a complete insertion. Rashi just fills in the missing words, if you will, missing idea. Rashi at the top here of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, Ubeshifcha Eino Chayav Elo Al Gemar Bia. With regard to intimacy with a Shifcha, there is no punishment unless he did a complete insertion. The Shifcha Zera Ksiv Ba, the word, the term Shifcha Zera appears in the context of the Shifcha, which tells us Shiru'uyo Lahazria. In other words, it must be a type of intimacy that is incapable of producing offspring. That's true only with a complete insertion, as opposed to a ma'ara, a partial insertion. We continue in the Mishnah, the top line, Ezo Shifcha. What is the Shifcha that the Torah is speaking about when dealing with this topic of the prohibition of relations with a Shifcha? The woman described is a woman who is half bondmaid and half free. How do we know that? Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'hafdei loy nivdasa." Divrei Rabbi Akiva. V'hafdei has to do with pidyon, means freedom, but hafdei lo nivdasa means she hasn't been completely freed. So you're talking about a shivcha that was, let us say, owned by two people, and one of them freed his holding in her. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Zu hi Shifcha Vadois. The Shifcha of the Torah is the complete bondmaid, the definitive bondmaid. Rabbi Elazar ben Yankiv Omer, Kol Arayas Mefuroshois, Uma Shior. This seems to be the same as what Rabbi Akiva says, and the Gemara will deal with this in due time. But with that, we conclude our shiur for today.